I left home to go to Moody in 1955, and I had never heard of this church. In fact, the number of Moody students from Wisconsin was relatively few, because we didn't have lots of Bible-teaching churches in Wisconsin. Now, that's changed since then. In any event, I didn't know the broad opportunities for ministry or the opportunities God would lead us to in that 30 years before we came here from the time I left home. When winter of 1980, I was dean of students at the seminary, my mother gave me money at Christmas to buy a top coat. So in January, I went up to the Hawthorne Mall in Mundelein to buy a top coat. And who was there but Paul Hansen buying a suit? Now, we would ask our graduates if they had a call, where they were planning to go. And he said, "I'm going to Green Lake." Tara said, I'd never heard of this church. And I said, "Paul, you're a young man. You're not going to stay there long. We would see the graduates, smaller churches in the country, as starter churches. And after a few years, they'd go on to something larger." I said, "Paul, you're not going to stay here long. Call me when you leave." I said, "That's close to my family home. I'd love to get up there." Four years later, in 1984, well, it'd be 30 years tomorrow, Paul called me, Labor Day. I said, "Art, I'm going to Burke, Virginia. Are you interested in this church?" I said, "Oh, Paul, I'm just starting school here. I don't know. Give him my name and I'll come for pulpit supply." So here I was, October 7th, 1984. And they pestered me until we came to candidate in January that year, 85, and then moved up the summer of 85. So we've been up here 85 years. The Free Church motto, statement, multiplying healthy churches among all people. And if first 30 years at Terre Shores, Pleasant Valley Community Church in Terre Shores, was planting a, what Charles Colson would call a beachhead in Satan's turf, the next 30 years were multiplying, and Randolph and Waupaca were the only churches, I'm sorry, Randolph and Green Lake were the only free churches between Madison and Waupaca. And with Berlin now, there are 10. So this has been an era of multiplying, and we thank God for that. You know, I just going to put another piece in that puzzle. When Paul gave my name to the elders, one of the elders, Rich Heidemann's family, had been active in Bible Baptist in Beaver Dam, which I was involved in starting in my undergraduate days at Moody and Wheaton. Rich knew our family. He called me and said, "Are you interested in coming up here?" And I said, same thing I said to Paul, "I'd be willing to do pulpit supply." And so I was called. Now, but in the 10 years at the seminary, Dr. Kenneth Conser, who was the academic dean for many years, the man with the vision to make a small free church seminary in Chicago into a world-class divinity school, became Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. When he was asked to leave Wheaton faculty and come out and lead the Trinity, he had a number of stipulations. One of them was that the faculty not be required to be members of free churches. That would give him greater breadth in attracting faculty who weren't members of free churches. Most denominational seminaries require their faculty and staff. So we weren't part of the free church in the 10 years I was on staff down there. In fact, we helped start a brethren group out in Lake Zurich where we're living. And so when I spoke to the district superintendent at some time that I'd like to find a church in Wisconsin. He said, you're not in a free church. You get in a free church in Illinois, I'll help you find a free church in Wisconsin. Well, that was the district policy. That was his policy, but it wasn't the seminary policy. You understand that if Paul hadn't given my name to the elders here, I may never have been invited up to preach or called as a pastor. I only mention that because those seem like small things, but those were turning points. Imagine meeting Paul, buying a suit in the mall, or having an elder here that knew my family. You know, only look back and say that was God's doing. Great is thy faithfulness. We used to sing that song at Moody very often. And that comes from the text from Lamentations 3. I want to read part of that text this morning and talk about that. Dr. Kaiser is here with me. You know, I tried to persuade the committee that he should preach. Why should I be up here? The poor you always have with you. He's only here occasionally. In fact, first time over here this weekend. In any event, his statement to the students at the seminary, and Gary and Paul, and we all had Dr. Kaiser as our teacher, keep your finger in the text. So I've been telling a story already and eating up a few minutes. I next service, 10 o'clock? So I can go. Oh, 9 o'clock. Yeah, okay. Next service in Berman's at 10 o'clock. Lamentations 3:21. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. The Lord is good to those whose hope is in him, to the one who seeks him. Whether Jeremiah wrote this or not, I was an eyewitness of the destruction of Jerusalem under the Babylonians in 586 and the people being taken captive into Babylon. And his lament was, because of the disobedience of the people, God allowed the Babylonians to destroy their city and temple. Going back to the covenant that God made with Israel at Mount Sinai under Moses, God said, I will be your God. I'll take care of you. I'll defend you. I'll provide for you. You just need to obey. And he gave the stipulations, which we call the Old Testament law, the stipulations of obedience, summarized in the Ten Commandments. But I'd like to read from Deuteronomy chapter 4 briefly, because it encapsulates the idea that the people were to obey God. And 40 years wandering in the wilderness because of the people's unbelief, and that generation died there, Moses led them to the edge of the promised land across the Jordan from Jericho and renewed the covenant with the people. And that's what we find in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 4. Be careful not to forget the covenant of the Lord your God that he made with you. Do not make for yourselves an idol in the form of anything the Lord your God has forbidden. For the Lord your God is a consuming fire and a jealous God. After you've had children and grandchildren and have lived in the land a long time, if you then become corrupt and make any kind of idol, doing evil in the eyes of the Lord your God and provoking him to anger, I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you this day that you will quickly perish from the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, and you will not live there long, but will certainly be destroyed. The Lord will scatter you among the peoples, and only a few of you will survive among the nations to which the Lord will drive you. There you will worship man-made gods of wood and stone, which cannot see or hear or eat or smell. But if from there you seek the Lord your God, you will find him if you look for him with all your heart, with all your soul. And when you're in distress and all these things have happened to you, then in the latter days you will return to the Lord your God and obey him. For the Lord your God is a merciful God, and he will not abandon or destroy you or forget the covenant with your forefathers, which he confirmed to them by oath. And so we could read much more of Deuteronomy, the blessings and the curses from chapter 28. But God made it very clear to the people that he would care for them, provide for them, as long as they obeyed and didn't worship other gods. And Dr. Kaiser spoke to us yesterday about Nebuchadnezzar, though probably never a true believer, because of God's dealing with him, he said, only God is great. Only the God of Israel is great. Only Yahweh. He's the only God. And if you worship other gods, Yahweh said, I'll remove you. And he did. And the Babylonians came and destroyed Jerusalem in 586. And now reading just a few other verses from Lamentations, this lamenter, perhaps Jeremiah, we're not sure, he lamented the death of a good King Josiah. He wrote this, chapter 1, verse 5, her foes have become her masters, her enemies are at ease. The Lord has brought her grief because of her many sins. Her children have gone into exile, captive before the foe. Down to verse 8, Jerusalem has sinned greatly, and so has become unclean. All who honored her despise her, for they have seen her nakedness. She herself groans and turns away. Verse 12. Is it nothing to you, all you that pass by? Look around you and see. Is any suffering like my suffering that was inflicted on me, that the Lord brought on me in the day of his fierce anger? So, the eyewitness to the destruction of Jerusalem here is lamenting that and acknowledging that it was God's punishment, chastening, judgment, because of their sin, because of their worshiping other gods. And so the writer then said, yet this I call to mind, therefore I have hope, because of the Lord's great love. Now, that great love is a Hebrew word that undoubtedly Gary and Paul have mentioned to you. Chesed, I can't pronounce that guttural very well. But it's covenant love, loving kindness. God remembers his covenant and keeps his commitment and covenant. And because of that, we're not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. That is, God's faithfulness is that he keeps his covenant promises because of his covenant love. So, God is a loving God, but he's a jealous God. He punishes disobedience, and he rewards and blesses obedience. But he always promised a remnant would return. And in God's providence, as he used the Babylonians as his tool of vengeance for their disobedience, he used Cyrus of Persia as his tool of grace, who defeated the Babylonians in 539, made a decree that Israel could go back to Jerusalem, should go back, rebuild the temple, worship your God, because he thought the whole kingdom, his whole kingdom would be blessed if the people were worshiping their gods back. They all had their own gods and their own lands, but he wanted Israel to go back and rebuild the temple. A remnant. He released them. But ultimately, only a remnant returned. part of God's plan to have his people scattered through the nations so that when Christ came and the gospel was preached, there was that witness to the true God scattered through the Roman Empire. You see, there comes a point of no return in our disobedience. Josiah was probably the best king, the most godly king. Got killed because of his foolishness, trying to challenge Pharaoh Necho, who was going up to help the Babylonians against the Assyrians. And as they're going up the Israel coast, Josiah goes out and tries to stop Pharaoh Necho, who said, "Get out of here. This isn't your fight. This isn't your business. Go home. God has sent me here." And Josiah was foolish and got killed in the midst of it. But Josiah brought more reform, tore down that golden calf at Bethel, removed the high places, the idols, restored, put the Ark of the Covenant back in the temple. He was the best king of all Israel in terms of bringing reform. He had a foolish lapse in his old age. That's a warning to some of us. But in any event, in spite of that, God didn't relent from his plan on punishing the Jews and destroying Jerusalem. This is 2 Kings 23. "Neither before nor after Josiah was there a king like him who turned to the Lord as he did, with all his heart, and with all his soul, with all his strength, in accordance with the law of Moses. Nevertheless, the Lord did not turn away from the heat of his fierce anger, which burned against Judah because of all that Manasseh had done to provoke him to anger." King Manasseh, if Josiah, the grandson of Manasseh, was the best, Manasseh was the worst. And at that point, God said, I'm going to destroy these people. I'm going to remove them. And even the reforms of Josiah wasn't enough. Jeremiah lamented. Perhaps he was an advisor to Josiah. He lamented the death of Josiah, his friend. You see, under Manasseh, there came that point of no return. Oh, there's so many threads I'd like to draw here. But a remnant did return and rebuild the temple. And it was destroyed again by the Romans because the Jews didn't recognize Christ as the Messiah, and they were scattered once more through the world until they were regathered in 1948 as a nation in Israel. But I think there's a warning. When God says no, we get beyond the point of no return. Dr. Kaiser mentioned this yesterday. I think we're all aware of it. We watch what's going on in the world. The absolute moral corruption of America, in virtually every aspect of our society. And then what's happening in the Middle East, the Muslim world, ganging up on Israel. A lot of the signs toward the end. Is America going to be saved, so to speak? Are we going to endure long? Only spiritual revival. What's going to bring spiritual revival? Men of God preaching the Word of God with faithfulness that bring people to repentance and bring them to their knees. And thus we need to continue to multiply healthy churches among all people. What the Free Church is about, what we're about. Only spiritual revival. Billy Graham's been saying it for years. Is America already at the point of no return? Only God knows. I'm an old man. I'm ready to go home. I'm tired. But I fear for my children, my grandchildren, as do you. We won't probably know this country. This country will not survive as we know it. We've lived under the benefit of a Tom Brokaw called the Greatest Generation, the leaders that came home from World War II and built this country. Great sacrifice. May God help us and have mercy. Now, I had hoped to talk a little bit more about God's faithfulness on this church, but just let me mention the West Houses. Nathan did a great film on the history of the church as well. And you know some of that. Don Wright was in that Pleasant Valley church with his grandmother as a lad, and he and Ruth together wrote a great deal of the history of Pleasant Valley and Terre Shores. Pastor Westhouse also went to Woodrow Island Institute, as half a dozen of your pastors and wives, some of them, went to Moody. Finished 1931, the Depression years, started a church in the south side of Chicago. Worked. He's always been bivocational. And in 1937, he got called to Clintonville, pastored a small church that has since become the Free Church in Clintonville. His wife took their two sons and went off to Texas. Not going to get into the reason for that. It's a fact. That's not a secret. He did pulpit supply. If the pain of divorce itself is very great, but it disqualified him for ministry in the eyes of most people. So he had to resign from the church. He was called to minister the Word of God. He was broken. But he got a job in Ripon at the Gamble store under Mr. Gerritsen. And the Gerritsens became part of the charter members of this room. Met Ruth Patch. They got married in 53, I think. And the Wiesners, Lillian, and others were very concerned about liberalism in many of the mainline denominations and found out Pastor Westhouse had been a pastor and was qualified and urged Pastor and Ruth to start a church on the west end of the lake, ministering to people out here. And sort of the rest is history. They found that little white church in the cemetery. You saw pictures. First service was Easter Sunday, 54. 60 years ago, that's what we're celebrating. That's 60 years of God's faithfulness. The Westhouses served 25 years. That building they could not use when the landowners died. They gave it another year or two. They bought land out in 73, and Margaret Dodge came and offered them this piece of land, which they bought, and with much sacrifice built the first phase of this building. To the best of my knowledge, Ruth and Irwin never got a salary here. They paid the bills. They had as many as 170 people in one year. They paid the bills, and sometimes there was some left that they could get. She taught. He had worked. He was bivocational most of his years. There were a variety of issues. And again, if you see that full video on the history of the church that Nate put together. A group of people in the church gave him 9 criticisms saying he should resign. His effectiveness was finished. He and Ruth prayed about it and came to the conclusion with the encouragement of some of the people that they should stay. And they stayed, and half the people left. Some of those people had also learned that the pastor had a divorce in his past, and that wasn't generally known here. And through much heartache, sacrifice, this church was, the foundations were laid. And when Pastor Paul Hansen came, there was just the remnant left. And the Westhouses retired in sorrow and grief. Irwin lived 5 more years. He died the 4th of July, 1985. We moved into that Victorian in Ripon. And 1st of July, 85, I never met him. Don Hansen called me that morning of the 4th and said, would you like to go to the hospital and see Pastor Westhouse? He was dying of cancer. I said, yes, Don, I'll go with you. Don called back and said, he's gone. It's too late. I never met him, but we got to know Ruth very well in Ripley, and I use this illustration again. God builds his church through very imperfect people. His loving kindness endures forever. His compassions are new every morning. And I wouldn't stand here if they weren't. I could go another half hour, but I'm going to quit because the time is up. As Gary said, when I retired from Ripon, some of you were there, end of 2000, I said the hardest thing, I was 50 years old when I came up here. They gave me a birthday party. You see the pictures of it out there, and the cane Fred gave me, a Neiman Marcus cane umbrella. And I was over the hill at 50. And if you can compute, you can figure out how old I am now. But I said at my farewell, I feel my gift is pastor-teacher, but my teaching gift is better used in the venue of a classroom. And the teaching we did in Ethiopia, I feel, is probably the most significant thing we ever did, training young men and women out there. And preaching every Sunday for 14 years over there and another approximately 2 years here. Hardest thing I ever did. By God's grace, we stuck it out. As Gary said, I'm maybe a little hard on myself, but I just thank you all for calling me and giving me the opportunity to serve up here. And, you know, we've got, with Berlin now, we've got 10 churches where there were two. Probably 2,500 people every Sunday where there were 250 between Randolph and Terre Shores. God's building his church. To God be the glory, great things he has done. Thank you.